Sports Illustrated. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin today's reading with a feature entitled Joe Madden's Advice to NFL Coaches, Let Travis Hunter Do Something Special. The former Major League Baseball manager who helped Shohei Ohtani blossom into an MVP and once coached Bo Jackson has some thoughts on how to help the NFL's incoming two-way star to succeed. And this feature is written by Sports Illustrated writer Connor Orr. After the Northridge earthquake in January of 1994, the scoreboard in the outfield at what was then known as Anaheim Stadium collapsed. A Marlboro sign with a dark silhouette of a cowboy leaned dangerously inward, peering over the grass as if he were trying to steal signs from home plate. Much of the signage to either side of the digital video screen was buckling like wet cardboard. As the California Angels returned to play that season, a riveter was positioned hundreds of feet in the air, working on a giant metal A in left center field, securing some of the new pieces of the park's aesthetic focal point back together. Perhaps emboldened by a thick pair of gloves, the worker shouted down at new California Angels outfielder Bo Jackson and asked whether he could throw him a ball. Jackson had yet to warm up, but as legend has it, stopped stretching, took one crow hop and uncorked an absolute missile of a ball straight at the stunned riveter, nailing him square in the mitt. Watching was a new major league staffer for the Angels named Joe Madden. Jackson was in the first year with the club and entering his age 31 season, his final year of professional baseball. By then, a slew of injuries related to his parallel baseball and football careers had diminished Jackson's abilities, especially as it pertained to his hips. Madden, stunned by what he had seen in the outfield that day, eventually brought up a novel idea to Marcel Lachman, who took over as manager in the middle of the season. Quote, "Can we put him in the bullpen, see what he looks like? Can we get him on that mound?" Of course, Madden says today, that never made it to Bo Jackson's ears. He continues, quote, "I mean, no one could throw a baseball that high. Nobody, nobody can do that. I wish these guys were around now. I wish I had some more Jack back then to push a little harder. I don't know if Bo would ever have wanted to do it, but I would have loved to see it," unquote. Joe Madden also tried to get the Angels' 1992 second-round pick Deshaun Warren to play designated hitter during his rest days from pitching because he was the fastest player in camp, another suggestion that was passed on due to nerves about how it would look. Warren never made it to the majors. Fittingly, Joe Madden would end up being brought back to Anaheim to manage Major League Baseball's first modern-day two-way superstar, Shohei Ohtani, in 2020, 2 years after Ohtani arrived in the States to play baseball. The next season, Madden oversaw Ohtani's first MVP campaign when he hit 46 home runs and pitched to a 3.18 ERA in 23 starts on the mound. His approach remains relevant as the NFL prepares to inherit its own version of Ohtani. University of Colorado star Travis Hunter, a Heisman Trophy winner who won both the Chuck Bednarik Award for Best College Defensive Player and the Fred Biletnikoff Award for the Best College Receiver in 2024. As recently as this week, Travis Hunter, widely expected to be a top three pick in the draft, said that he would rather not play football than be forced to choose one position. This amid the typical safety net talk of anonymous scouts who see Hunter as a player who should either major as a cornerback or a wide receiver. Madden speaks with a breezy tone these days. At the age of 71, his goals are very much in the moment. Another round under 80 at the golf course, his current run is 3 consecutive days. And while it might be a surprise to some that the former manager of the cutting-edge Tampa Bay Rays, one of baseball's most significant analytical success stories, having taken a meager payroll to the 2008 World Series, sees the path to success for Travis Hunter as one of relationships not overly influenced by data. Travis Hunter, like Ohtani, is coming to the NFL with a defined purpose, not only to play, but to play both ways. Madden says that the team that drafts him needs to resist the urge to suffocate that desire, which would risk getting less out of a player on the field. For reference, Hunter played roughly 1,500 snaps at Colorado last year. A top-tier every-down cornerback plays about 1,100 snaps during an NFL regular season. The three most heavily snapped wide receivers in the NFL last year played a little more than 1,000 total snaps. Quote, "The player is the one who knows how to do this. The rest of us don't," Madden says. In the world of analytics, there are all kinds of equation and matrices built in order to figure out how often he'll be able to play, how many hits he can take, how many runs over 20 yards, how fast his speed was. Has he lost any of that speed? Does he need any rest? We're going to go through all of those scenarios to try and figure it out. And that's insane. Trust the player. Talk to the player. You're doing something that's never been done before. I mean, it's a lot of running, so rest him a couple of series. If he's playing defense and it's three and out all runs, why would that bother you? Or you could take him in and out of games earlier, almost like we do with pitchers now, where we pitch them less in the beginning of the year, so we have them at the end of the year, unquote. Madden remembers the hesitancy across baseball when Ohtani was going through the bidding process. Because some teams are so married to their various data sets that red flagged a hitter skipping batting practices to focus on pitching or vice versa, not to mention a player who would have to be extremely cautious about muscular overload, there were clubs, even the Angels, who feared signing the generational player would be more trouble than it was worth. The potential embarrassment of Ohtani flaming out and sustaining some kind of irreversible damage to his body was part of the equation. "We all worry about people getting injured," Madden says. "Listen, people get injured. Sports are tough, and I don't get the analytical concepts behind protecting a player from being injured, unquote. When he was managing, Joe Maddon was part of an early group of coaches and executives privy to player tracking data, which measured how far someone ran, how often they slid, how fast, how much exertion came from the run, and how often that player was active on the base paths. From that data, there was an attempt to create an equation that determined when a player needed a rest day. It's crap, Maddon says. It's not worth the time spent on it. These NFL coaches know. Baseball people know. We know when a guy needs a rest. We can see it in his eyes. We just have to develop a relationship where we get honesty in return. It's like a relief pitcher. They really monitor the amount of times that you can use a relief pitcher in a month. But to me, it's about the guy. Some guys are more resilient than others. Some guys pitch better on day 3 than game 2. Some starters, 110 pitches doesn't bother them nearly as much as 90 pitches may bother someone else. It's so different, and they try and create this one-size-fits-all method, which is not true. But they're convincing players that it is true, and you're robbing the sport of charismatic, dynamic players because everything is being monitored, unquote. Maddon cautions that while he finds numbers useful, much of the way he handled his relationship with Ohtani involved a few simple features. First, agreeing to the parameters with the players and select decision makers beforehand. Philosophically, everyone has to be on board, he says. You need synergy. Everyone has to be in agreement, and while you're setting it up, not everyone is going to be in agreement. But after the arguing is done, everyone needs to have everyone else's back. That is really, really important. If people start going rogue, even behind someone's back, it's going to blow up. Whoever belongs in the group, have them in the group, unquote. Secondly, appreciate the newness of the situation and allow for trial and error based on the player's own self-assessment. I told Shohei the rules are that there are no rules, Maddon says. I told him that he had to be very, very honest with me and that I would be honest with him in return. We would communicate daily, and that's it, unquote. Maddon says that while we would develop a feel for each of his players individually, for example, he would pull a pitcher immediately if, after being asked how he's feeling, the pitcher says, fine, but monitor me in the next inning, knowing that the player was pushing past his limits. Ohtani always took the directive to heart. He was always upfront about his level of fatigue. Next, get comfortable with the idea that one player is going to be treated somewhat differently and be upfront in addressing that with others. Ohtani, Maddon says, was like a punter or a place kicker who had his own unique schedule and was not always within the team's orbit on a moment-to-moment basis. And I was good with that. Some people started complaining, and I was like, are you crazy? What are you complaining about here? Can you do what he does? Can you be the Cy Young Award winner and an MVP-level hitter? No? Okay, then stop. There's always innate jealousies, and I'm sure that there will be some hazing at the NFL level. But it sounds like the kid can handle it. And when he goes out on the field and performs, he will shut everybody up. With Shohei, everyone shut up, and that was going to happen, unquote. Joe Maddon doesn't want to paint himself as anti-analytics altogether. Especially when he was with the Rays, he found that department's particular weight on players in the acquisition process was helpful, among other useful tidbits. But in talking about Ohtani's ability to silence a group of professional cynics with awe when placing us in left center field as Jackson catapulted a baseball into space, he is trying to reclaim the idea of personal magic. He's trying to empower someone who has already done something special and would like to continue doing something special. The beauty of the situation is that when approaching it that way, a team can give itself some grace. There is always a caveat in the plan that allows for change if it clearly isn't working. But there is nothing worse, nothing more disappointing than allowing someone like Jackson to disappear from baseball without even towing the mound. There is nothing sadder than the idea of telling Travis Hunter what he can and cannot do just because numbers on a page red flag our own fears and insecurities, ones that the player clearly does not possess. And again, that feature is entitled Joe Madden's Advice to NFL Coaches, Let Travis Hunter Do Something Special, written by Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated. And the next Sports Illustrated feature is entitled The Naval Academy Safety, Who is Ready for War and Ready for the NFL Draft. Rayun Lane III chose the Naval Academy for football and may also end up in conflicts where the stakes are life or death. But for now, he wouldn't change one single thing. And this feature is written by Sports Illustrated writer Greg Bishop. A typical day in the atypical life of one 2025 NFL draft prospect begins the unusual with the usual. Alarms sound at 7:30 a.m. sharp on the former grounds of Fort Severn. The Yard, as the U.S. Naval Academy is known to its cadets, wakes up quickly. Formation starts at 7 a.m. Classes at 7:50 a.m. Breakfast inhaled in between. At 11:45, this prospect uses his quote-unquote break to lift weights, study game film, recover, and refuel. Then, more classes. Then, more workouts, speed and agility focused, or technique driven, or more film, or weights, or recovery until 8 p.m. Then, a mandatory 2-hour study period, followed by his only quote-unquote free time, which is, quote, pretty much, the prospect says, just sleep, unquote. These cadets become ensigns in the Navy or second lieutenants in the Marine Corps. Many go to war. Most know what's brewing in the geopolitical hemisphere, all the threats and conflicts. Many will commit to at least 5 years anyway. This is their duty, their commitment. And then there is Rayun Lane III. He will complete his academy requirements this spring. He will fulfill his 5-year commitment soon. For now, Lane will pursue another career where futures remain uncertain and daily schedules feature motivational slogans such as your choice, the pain of discipline, or the pain of regret. He's ready. No one questions that. Ready, in fact, for war, and not in the misguided metaphorical sense. He's ready for actual war, so this other career in professional football, which is not war, will somehow present lower stakes than he has already prepared for, and perhaps his only chance to fulfill the dream he has toiled towards his entire life. Imagine that investment, week after week, that schedule, football in the fall, practices and film review and games, while world leaders fight and war breaks out in Ukraine and in Gaza, and so many countries all over the world shout and threaten in anger, division, and conflict. Imagine the concentration required, the scheduling, the guts. He's not the excuse-summoning type. Even though Lane chose the Naval Academy for football and may also end up in conflicts where the stakes are life or death. In and of itself, a legitimate NFL prospect from any of the service academies is rare. At present, there are 6 graduates from one of 3 service academies playing in the NFL. Lane wants to be the 7th. Lane fell for football the first time around the age of 5. He soon joined youth teams and starred in peewee leagues and made football his primary mission. His family moved from Ohio to Baltimore the next year, where the hometown Ravens stoked his gridiron obsessions with a championship in Super Bowl 47. His family attended the victory parade. As the middle child born to William and Felicia Lane, sandwiched between an older sister and a younger brother, Rayun still somehow managed to become the one that the others looked towards. Like another father figure in the house, his mother says, rough, tough, reserved, a natural leader. She describes his personality, even in boyhood, as very stern, sometimes even comical to watch, unquote. Like spying on her youngest child and reminding her oldest of house rules. Rayun had instincts, intellect, vibes. He was also gloriously low maintenance. On Baltimore area basketball courts, he wore the same sneakers for 2 consecutive years. Not because he didn't want new shoes, not because his weren't fraying, because he didn't want to bother Mom. At the Gilman School in suburban Baltimore, Lane joined a college prep powerhouse. He ran track, had 3 letters, played basketball, also with 3 letters, and football, with 2 letters. Football began to feel more like a weight that he carried. Basketball beckoned the combo guard. Gilman's football program had hit a lull, and his football aims seemed far removed from his reality. A junior varsity freshman season where opposing quarterbacks mostly avoided him, and he grew bored playing quarterback on offense. With his parents' blessing having fallen out of love, he took a season off. The time away lent the wisdom that Lane would apply to all the next steps. He needed football for the discipline, the camaraderie, to make up whatever he could to the teammates that Lane still believes that he let down. I realize, like, football is my life, he says. In his junior season and in 2019, Lane played running back and returned punts and kickoffs. He excelled at defensive back as a hybrid who rotated positions. He made All-State, but he still needed another year of game film, more highlights from his senior season where he scored 7 times in the first 2 games. And then COVID-19 shut down sports. The mental health break combined with a global pandemic to limit Lane's film, spliced from 1 elite season and 1 2-game season. He needed to participate in skill camps to display his talent relative to other prospects. Those were wiped out along with the seasons. Lane became emblematic of this generation of college athletes, the one that understood the necessity of mental health, and the one caught in COVID-19's destructive wake. He would leave high school as a 0-star recruit, Perhaps his football dream had actually been realized. Then it arrived like a bolt of lightning, a bona fide scholarship offer, the first of few, from the Naval Academy. "We didn't see that coming," Felicia says. She called Rayun's high school coach and asked, "Is this legit?" Indeed. She knew her son, serious, loyal. She knew what those Navy coaches projected as well. She heard them saying, "We see you. We see your talent. Here is your opportunity," unquote. And she also knew right then, right away, Rayun would be a midshipman. The Lane family understood the football odds, which from any service academy into the NFL were long and uncertain, far lower than, say, the odds that he would see military combat. As the Lane parents dropped Rayun off for his first year, they emphasized what they had always told him. Put in the time. Dedicate yourself. Give it your all. Things have a way of working themselves out. Immediately, Lane subscribed to Navy mantras such as this from the football program. EAT. Effort, attitude, toughness. He started the final 7 games of his first season, made the team's calls on defense, led teammates with far more experience, and surged on special teams, especially in the gunner role, which he played as if possessed. This time, Lane played in his sophomore season, spearheading a punt return group ranked 23rd nationally, and a kick return team at number 25. He displayed versatility. He almost never got injured. He never left a single practice, let alone a game. His coaches saw a player with more natural talent than they typically could land, and saw someone who hadn't come anywhere close to unlocking all the traits that separated him. After completing half of his academy training, Lane faced a choice that he could make only right then. After 2 years at the academy, the Navy presents cadets with, quote-unquote, 2-for-7 contracts. If signed, they agree to an additional 7 years of service, minimum. For Lane, that meant 2 more years and seasons at the academy, and 5 more in the Marine Corps. He entered the transfer portal to assess his options. He visited a handful of programs, drawing interest from Notre Dame, UCLA, and Ole Miss. Then he considered his football future in relation to his overall one. He still loved the game as much as anyone loves anything. But those 2 years of commitment had changed him as a person, too. One program offered $1 million in NIL cash to leave Navy and potentially war behind. Lane turned it all down, the money, the status, the eyeballs. He chose Navy. He chose his teammates. He chose the program. He chose home. He signed for the 2-for-7 papers. He mapped out how he would complete his degree in quantitative economics and chose his future in a more holistic sense. He chose football, but not only football. He chose football and his degree and his commitment and balance. Even if balance for him means elite focus on 2 things and little else beyond them. He describes this growth, his personal evolution now, as similar to coming across a light that you've never seen before and being able to take that light and apply it to every relationship you have, unquote. Navy, then, marked a relatively easy choice, he says. This didn't just make Lane a better soldier or a better human. It made him a better football player, too. After returning to Navy, he made 12 more starts his junior season and made third-team All-AAC. The four interceptions that he snagged tied for the 16th in the country. National analysts began placing him on watch lists for the Jim Thorpe Award, conferred annually to the nation's best defensive back. Only one player from the service academies had ever won it, Trey Taylor of Air Force in 2023. No Navy football star had won a quote-unquote major award since Roger Staubach delivered the Naval Academy a Heisman Trophy back in 1963. Off the field, Lane became a squad leader in charge of seven other midshipmen in the 8th Company of their brigade. His class vowed to return the football program to a winning season for the first time since the year 2019, which marked the last time that Navy won the Commander-in-Chief's trophy, too. Against Memphis, a conference rival that finished the 2024 season with an 11-win, 2-loss record, Lane made his 33rd consecutive start at free safety, his most typical position. Pundits were tabbing the Tigers as the most likely college football playoff team from the non-power conferences. Navy hosted and hung around, leading 49-44 with less than a minute remaining. Lane stepped in front of a pass attempt that he saw early, grabbed the interception, and raced 86 yards to the end zone for the game-sealing pick-six score. He won't ever forget how that celebration felt amid a sea of cadets who forced their way onto the field alongside the brothers that he couldn't leave behind. That same night, though, Lane cautioned himself against feeling too good or looking too far ahead. He credited the coaching staff. He pleaded with teammates for consistency. He invoked a mantra the midshipmen deployed all season: don't choke on the sugar. Navy reached a record of 5 wins, no losses, and their free safety, the program's single best player, made many a midseason All-America list, same as Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, and Will Campbell, all nearly certain to be taken in the first 10 picks in April's draft. Upon toppling Charlotte, Navy had started a season 6-0 for the first time since 1979. Lane had become a bona fide NFL prospect. His agent, Kelton Crenshaw of Clutch Sports, noted one particular review. Clutch Sports Group had named Steve Keim the general manager of its football division before the 2024 pro and college seasons after he stepped down as the Arizona Cardinals general manager at the end of the 2022 season. "A couple of my guys in the league are talking about this guy," Keim told Crenshaw, who, after a brief examination, began trying to hook Lane as a client. Navy lost 3 games in 2024. Still, the midshipmen were consistent. They didn't choke on any sugar. They toppled East Carolina, then ranked 18th, on the road by 2 touchdowns. They beat Army, returning the Commander-in-Chief's trophy to its quote-unquote rightful home in Annapolis. They became only the 6th Navy team in 131 football seasons to hit double-digit victories. And they vanquished the Oklahoma Sooners in the Armed Forces Bowl. The College Football Network named Lane a first-team All-American on special teams and its Special Teams Player of the Year. Other lists placed him as an honorable All-American at safety. Two NFL evaluators, Sports Illustrated asked about Lane, considered him the single best quote-unquote gunner in the country last year, which in and of itself should be enough for the chance to make a roster. He even began returning punts again, while starting 43 consecutive games. And then Lane became only the fifth midshipman ever to accept an invitation to the Senior Bowl. And then Lane became the first Navy football player invited to the NFL Combine since 2019. And then, well, we'll see. Even Lane isn't exactly sure. Lane's major, quantitative economics, centers on proving real-life hypotheses through numbers and scientific analysis. He already has those: 244 tackles, 9 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, 7 interceptions, 2 defensive touchdowns, 21 pass breakups, 8 forced fumbles, 3 fumble recoveries, the big and, his 4-year commitment to sacrifice and leadership and causes far bigger than himself or any sport. I would say that the numbers behind his NFL hypothesis are, you know, pretty good, Lane says. The case for Ryun Lane III starts there. It continues with his brain, that analytical bearing. Always figuring stuff out. He will add brain power to any franchise, but he'll also learn football, schemes, adjustments, nuances, technique complexities at far higher levels than before. Lane can then apply that knowledge to his existing versatile skill set. The NFL evaluators gave him above-average grades on ball skills, experience, speed, versatility, creating turnovers, instincts when playing downhill in run support, football processing speed, ability to manipulate quarterbacks, zone coverage, and straight-line quickness. Lane also ranked among the top 20 safeties in the nation in overall grades and pass coverage grades on many prospect evaluation sites. After 8 weeks of the 2024 college football season, his 90.2 coverage grade ranked among the top 15 defensive backs in the FBS. Development remains essential. At 5'11", weighing in at about 200 pounds, Lane presents as an undersized safety. His coverage skills at present would not allow for a full-time move to cornerback. His tackling technique, according to evaluators, can be improved. He must adjust to NFL level across-the-board talent, too. That said, it's not hard to see a future Lane can see that others have missed. Imagine, right coaches, right system, right brain, right work ethic, right growth. The larger issue centers on one metric from one day at the most critical evaluation showcase. Lane did run the 40-yard dash in 4.57 seconds at the NFL Combine. His time ranked 13th among the 15 safeties who ran in Indianapolis. His broad jump ranked 4th among participants. His vertical leap ranked 5th. His 20-yard shuttle time ranked 3rd. Speed, though, is a requirement for pro football employment. In defense of his 40 time, all other safety prospects at the Combine prepared in elite training centers where they trained specifically to run one 40-yard dash in front of professional football evaluators. They had specialized speed coaches. They didn't have formation in the morning or classes for 6 hours every day. Lane, his agent says, quote, pretty much took off his Navy cadet uniform and ran the 40, unquote. It stands to reason that he will improve there. If drafted, Lane will become the 18th Navy football player ever to earn that particular distinction. At that point, he'll apply for a waiver to delay his military commitment for a professional sports career, however long it might last. To obtain sign-off, he will likely need to make a team. Last season, while Rayun began finishing his Navy football career and naval commitment, his younger brother, Dewan, played spot duty in 16 games as a true freshman at Penn State. Felicia, meanwhile, became the Lane family travel consultant. She printed out the midshipman schedule and the Nittany Lions slate. She compared them side by side. She took notes, and she created a budget and made reservations. Dejon is 3 inches taller and about 10 pounds heavier than his older brother. He also plays for a major college power, a college football playoff team last season that finished 2024 ranked fifth. Dejon will ostensibly develop faster than his older brother, which perhaps presents an alternative reality for Rayun. Rayun Lane III has not and will never look back at what might have been if he played another high school football season or if most of his senior year wasn't lost to COVID-19 or if his first scholarship offer had been elsewhere or if he had transferred or if he had played for a quote-unquote major program or if he had cashed in on NIL dollars. Abstract concepts, all of them, each meaningless, at least for Lane as of now. The NFL draft begins April 24th. Lane will likely hear his name on day 3. Roughly a month later, he will graduate with his class at the Naval Academy. As a better leader, as a better football player, as a better man. The boy who attended the Ravens' last championship parade competed at the team's local pro day, fully aware of all the symmetry involved. There is definitely a full circle moment, he says. Because he did stay, and as his commitment to greater purposes heightened, his love for football did not shrink. His skill set only grew. His mind only broadened. Lane says that he still thinks back to the transfer portal time almost every day. Not because he feels slighted or overlooked, and not for ego. Because he's thankful for his teammates. Because he is grateful for the turnaround. Because he wouldn't change one single thing about any of it. Remember that family motto? Things have a way of working themselves out. And again, that feature is entitled The Naval Academy Safety Who is Ready for War and Ready for the NFL Draft, written by Sports Illustrated writer Greg Bishop. And the next Sports Illustrated feature is entitled Lee Corso and Dick Vitale Endured Because They Transcended Their Roles. In an industry where crisp delivery is considered vital and polish is prized, ESPN made remarkable concessions. And this feature is written by Pat Ford of Sports Illustrated. Corporate behemoths do not naturally engender a lot of warmth and affection from consumers. America is not wired that way, largely for good reason. We're always bracing for the next price hike or curtailing of service. Specifically, the broadcast business is a brass tacks world where sentiment is for suckers and career shelf lives can be mercilessly short. But when a giant money-making entity displays some grace and humanity, it's okay to note it. And ESPN's respectful, downright affectionate treatment of two of the most important broadcasters in its history deserves applause. Lee Corso and Dick Vitale helped make the worldwide leader in sports into what it is. Vitale was a beacon of energy and enthusiasm in the 1980s as ESPN earned a foothold in the sporting landscape with its college basketball coverage. Corso was much the same in the late 80s and 90s when ESPN turned College Game Day into an American institution. They have endured as on-air personalities into their 80s. Corso is now 89, Vitale is 85. Those marathon tenures are in part because they've wanted to keep going, and in part because ESPN welcomed them to keep going. The corporate behemoth has shown steadfast loyalty to two of its greatest assets, even if neither is near the top of his game. ESPN announced on Thursday that Corso will retire after the August 30th College Game Day show. By then, he will be 90 years old. He suffered a stroke in 2009 that significantly impacted his broadcast ability in terms of both speech and cognition, but his place on College Game Day remained secure. In an industry where crisp delivery is considered vital and polish is prized, ESPN made a remarkable concession to Corso. The network let him be who he is after the stroke, and pretty much everyone was happy to see him still on the air. His presence was comforting to the masses. He didn't have to be perfect. He didn't have to dominate the set. He didn't have to be as madcap as he used to be. He was afforded some grace. The Game Day crew has been especially supportive and protective of Corso, from Kirk Herbstreit to Chris Fowler to Reese Davis and on down the line to both on- and off-camera personnel. The affection for Corso is obvious and genuine. The Game Day crew has helped him along when he needed it. They've worked around his limitations, and they've continued to feature his headgear-wearing game picks as the last element of the show leading into a full Saturday of games. It's the noon Eastern Standard Time send-off everyone wants to see every week. ESPN rightly appraised Corso's value to the show and the entire sport as being more than sharply delivered one-liners. He's a human tradition. Generations of football fans grew up watching him, and nobody wanted to see him go before he's ready to go. Now he's ready. The tributes will roll in for months, reaching a crescendo in August. It's all deserved. Similarly, ESPN has ridden with Vitale through bouts with cancer that took away his voice for quite a while. But he came back for a few games this past season. Voice impacted, but ESPN celebrated his return. Vitale was, as usual, an emotional geyser on air. And so what? This was another human tradition worth sustaining. I worked at ESPN from 2004 to 2011, and I've known both Corso and Vitale much longer than that. They've both treated me with great kindness and camaraderie, even when I was a relative nobody working at the Courier-Journal in Louisville, Kentucky. There are plenty of jerks in the broadcast business, but these are not two of them. During my ESPN tenure, I did a fair amount of work with the game day crew. Off the set, Corso was always interested in the games themselves, matchups and storylines, who had the edge, etc. Live TV and the preparation for it can be a pressurized environment. Yet, I do not recall Corso ever being angry or stressed out. And after the stroke, his humanity actually served as a perspective check on what really mattered. College Game Day is a talk show about football, and it's supposed to be fun. Corso always kept the fun in the job. Vital has similarly embraced the joy of college sports. He thrived in the showman's role more than immersing in the X's and O's. The hyperbole, the shouting, the run-on commentary filled with his signature sayings, the Dickie V. Razzmatazz has been about entertainment. As with the late, great Bill Walton, he's not there for the pick-and-roll breakdowns. He's there for the show. And that's been fine for the vast majority of the viewing audiences over time. I don't know how much longer Vital will call games, but now we do know the end for Corso, and thankfully it's not coming in a dry news release after he's already walked away. I'm glad he's gotten to wear the mascot headgear all these years. I'm glad he'll get to do it one more time. In a broadcast industry that can coldly discard the ages when they lose a step, ESPN said not so fast. It held on to its old friends. The college sports world has had more failings in recent years than anyone can count, but keeping Lee Corso and Dick Vitale on the air is not one of them. And again, that feature entitled Lee Corso and Dick Vitale endured because they transcended their roles, written by Pat Ford, who is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, who covers college football and college basketball, as well as the Olympics and horse racing. And next, let's turn to Sports Illustrated's Faces in the Crowd section by Dan Falkenheim. And he leads off with Madi Mentenko, and her sport is swimming. Her hometown is Colorado Springs, Colorado. Madi, a senior at Pine Creek High School, broke Missy Franklin's 500-yard freestyle state record with a time of 4 minutes 39 seconds in a preliminary heat at the 5A state championships. She went on to win titles in both the 200 and 500 freestyle to become the third female swimmer to go undefeated in two individual events across four state finals. Madi is committed to Virginia. Another face in the crowd is Tunde Yesofu. His sport is basketball, and his hometown, Santa Maria, California. Yesufu, a 6'6" small forward for St. Joseph High School, had 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 steals in a 93-62 win over Weston Ranch, breaking the state career scoring mark that was set in 2004 by DeMarcus Nelson. The Baylor commit and McDonald's All-American moved from Benin to the U.S. before his freshman year. He averaged 28 points, 7.7 rebounds, and 3.6 steals through 26 games this season. And in the world of track and field, as he rounded the second curve during the 500-meter final at the Virginia Showcase, Bayside High School senior Andrew Salvadon knew that he needed to pump his arms and not slow down. He says that he wasn't nervous, but he had reason to be. He was neck and neck with U.S. Olympic gold medalist Quincy Wilson. Quote, "I thought if I get to the break first, I can probably hold on to the lead," unquote, says Andrew. He cut to the inside lane and surged ahead. He heard the crowd but didn't sense Quincy behind him. His body swayed near the 400-meter mark. His vision blurred as he neared the finish line, where he broke the national high school record by 0.76 seconds with a time of 1 minute 0.049 seconds. After the race, Andrew received hundreds of texts and a reaction at school unlike anything he had experienced before. "Everyone walked out of their rooms and started clapping," says Andrew, a South Carolina commit who also won the 500-meter high school event at the Millrose Games in February. "I was shocked," he added. And that's all the time that we have for this reading from Sports Illustrated. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Sports Illustrated. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.